Well, I've got to say, it seems really odd to have two Pastor Carls in this room this morning. Yesterday I was down and people kept saying, "Hey, Carl," I kept turning around and they weren't talking to me at all. They were talking to me. "Do you want to just stand up in case not everyone knows you? It's Pastor Carl McCann from the Ashton Church." So let's give him a big welcome, shall we? And I've got a little something for him to do later on, but I have warned him, so that's okay. This is, as you know, the first Sunday of Advent. So it's four Sundays leading up to Christmas, and we light a candle and we have readings, and we just want to acknowledge we're getting ready for the coming of Christ, this great celebration. And so what I want to do this morning is actually conclude a series of thoughts that we started some 6 weeks ago, which was entitled, "Our God is an Awesome God." And a little bit later on, we're going to sing that chorus just before we sing our final piece, actually. So a quick recap of 1 minute, okay, where we start off in Isaiah a few weeks ago, thinking about how God's ways are different to our ways and his thinking is so much higher than the way we think. You know, sometimes we think about things, we think that's great. Well, God's thinking is so much higher than ours and his ways is so much greater and higher than ours. They're different to ours. And then we thought about that passage in Luke where Jesus said that he talks about how God knows us intimately and he knows all the details about our lives. He even knows the number of hairs that are on your head. Now, for some people, God doesn't need to count very much, but for others, you know, he knows it all. This seemingly insignificant piece of information tells us that God knows every single thing about you. And then, of course, we looked at that passage in Romans 8 where it says that nothing can separate you from the love of God that he shows in Jesus Christ. And that is an awesome thing, of course. And then last week, we thought about the one who is above us in every single way, not just in our home, not just in our country or the world or the universe, but far above that. He's above everyone and above everything. And the one who is above us came to be among us. And that's an incredible thought. And of course, that's what we celebrate at Christmas. And so this morning, just to roll that kind of theme on just a bit further this morning, and as we do so, we come to the crunch. And you know what the crunch is, don't you? Well, on a Sunday lunchtime, when my wife, she always likes to do a Sunday roast, and sometimes we have a roast pork, and she makes a thing called cracklin. Anybody like cracklin? Ingrid's very good at making cracklin. But the thing about cracklin is, you know, it comes round in a bowl as we're starting, and people take a bite, and you can hear them, you know, you can't eat it quietly. It just makes so much noise. And this morning, here is the crunch. Our awesome God, Most High, has come to live amongst us. Now, that sounds rather bland, because we hear it every Christmas, and we sing about it, and all the pastors around the country are starting to talk about these kind of things. And in the reading this morning from John Mark, "And the Word became flesh and blood, and walked among us." But he didn't just arrive and start walking, did he? He arrived and started to cry as a child. And then he grew, just like you and I have done. And I don't know how tall he eventually ended up, but he became a child, and then a teenager, and then a young man, and then he started his ministry at the age of 30. And so there's this ongoing thought of he went through the same feelings and emotions and battles that every single one of us have gone through. So Jack, the Lord knows all the things that you have gone through, and you know he knows because he's been there before you. He's been there before us all. And so on Advent Sunday, we start to think about the baby over Christmas time, and as we do, we're reminded about this portrayal in nativity scenes and carols that we sing and everything else. But this is God working in infant ways. Because he started as an infant. And God works in infant ways. And sometimes where you've got an infant, years ago in society, they used to be seen but not heard. And children were nothing and still are nothing in some cultures today. But God works in infant ways. Think of some of the infant ways going on in this church or your church or some of the other churches around the district, in our country today. There's lots of little infant ways in which God is at work. And we think, well, that's not very much. Well, Jesus came, God's Son came into our world in embryonic form, not very big. And then he was born as a child and it, you know. But then it gets to the point where he isn't just in infant ways, he is in youth ways. Because that's what I want to think about this morning. Yes, Jesus Christ was in fact a teenager at one point. He was a teenager. So this means that what God has begun as an infant and then on to teenage years, he would keep going until he would bring it to completion. Now just imagine, I know some of you are very good at very lively and vibrant imaginations. So all together this morning, we're going to imagine that we're all being transported back in time 2,000 years, and this group who are with us this morning, they've actually been part of a youth group. Some of them have come from Nazareth, some have come from other little villages nearby, but the whole area was Galilee, and all these young people have all come together, and they're having a bit of fun last night and everything else. And yes, it means that if we go back 2,000 years ago, Jesus is amongst this group today. Use your imagination. We're going back 2,000 years. He's amongst us today, sitting here in the church as a teenager. That's the corollary of what I'm trying to say. That's ultimately what I'm trying to say. If he was a baby, we believe he was, then he became a teenager on his way to starting his ministry. And so a local synagogue gives them the thumbs up to have some activities in their church, in their synagogue, and even have a sleepover. And yes, they must have had sleepover sometime in those days. And so early the next morning, everyone comes into the synagogue, just like we have just now. And it's a small building, but it's packed with the usual visitors and the usual people who come, and then the youth group from the Galilean region, and the building is packed, and they have a worship service, and they've just learned one of the recent psalms that have been written, and they've had some tambourines and some brass instruments playing away in the background, helping with the music. And then during one of the songs, with great elaborate ceremony, some of the elders of the synagogue, they go to a special corner of the synagogue and they retrieve the scroll of Isaiah the prophet. And with great ceremony, they parade it up to the front and they unroll it to a certain part in Isaiah. And it's prepared to be read. And just at that point, the rabbi... Rabbi Carl McCann, I've got it here for him. It's going to come up here for you, so you don't need to panic. So, just at that point, the rabbi of the synagogue reads the passage from Isaiah.
In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a throne, high and exalted, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphs, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory."
And everyone in the synagogue, they love this passage. You know, it's about holy, 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 the Lord Almighty over everyone and everything. The whole earth is filled with his glory. And they're going, "Wow, praise the Lord. Isn't that wonderful?" And there in their midst is the Word become flesh. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? They're thinking, "Wow, God Almighty." And in the midst is a teenager from the group in Nazareth, from the YP group, the NY group in Nazareth. And he's there. He's in the midst of them, one of the teenagers. Jesus Christ, the Messiah, who John later would write about, and the Word became flesh. But we usually just think of the baby at nativity scene, don't we? But he's sitting amongst us this morning. And I wonder if you've ever thought about Jesus as a teenager. 22% of the life of Christ was lived as a teenager. Now, I think that those teenage years of Jesus Christ have to mean something incredibly significant. They were not just a nothing. They were very significant. They were significant times of Jesus as a teenager maturing and becoming an adult. It was part of his faith growing. And we know from that infant passage in Luke chapter 2 that when Jesus was at the age of 12, he had disappeared for 3 days. Isn't that incredible? And his mum and dad come looking for him, and they find him. He's lost. They find him after 3 days, maybe a little bit annoyed at him. They find him in the temple, and there he is listening to the elders, and he's got tremendous wisdom even then. And he said, "Why were you bothered about this? Didn't you know that I had to be about my father's business, or I had to be in my father's house?" So what did that mean? Well, we know that he didn't start his public ministry until he was the age of 30. So during his teens, what happened? We're using our imagination here, okay? His family was very important to him. As a teenager, your family has to be really important to you. And then, of course, as we know, Joseph, his stepdad, died quite young. Well, he was a lot older than Mary, so he dies. He's got other siblings between Joseph and Mary, and there's mentions four brothers altogether, and there are some sisters. So he is now Jesus, the oldest one. He's the breadwinner, so he's got certain responsibilities that he's got to face up to as a teenager. That's quite a weight on someone's shoulders. And so we know his stepdad was a carpenter. He becomes a carpenter, a joiner, and he uses these skills. He acquires these skills, and he does something constructive. He makes things. They sell them. He brings in money to put food on the table to look after his family. Here is a teenager, Jesus Christ. So I want to suggest to you, and it is a suggestion because you don't read about it specifically in the Gospels like this, but this is God living as a teenager amongst us. And does Jesus enjoy a laugh? Yes, he does. Just like any other teenager, he likes to have a good laugh. And certainly he was a joyful adult, so therefore he was a joyful teenager. And yes, Jesus was a teenager. He lived as a teenager. But if we ask, what was Jesus like as a teenager, then we would probably have to say something like this, that he loved his family. He realized, you know, he had to grow up quick, and there's certain responsibilities he had to take on. He couldn't just leave it to other people. You know, it's really something for a teenager to take on a responsibility. I was really chuffed yesterday to watch the AGM here and people being elected onto a position and taking up a responsibility. You know, that's normal. You know, teenagers have got to do this. And then to do something constructive. Not knowing the specifics of what Jesus actually did as a teenager, this is my suggestion. You can't turn the Gospels to the section where it says Jesus as a teenager, because it's not there. But we know that God's son Jesus lived as a teenager in a less than exciting place called Nazareth. And there was a little sign that they were reminded of over and over again, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" And well, he didn't like that one, I'm sure. But what we do know for definite is at the age of 30, when he began his ministry with baptism at the River Jordan under the ministry of John the Baptist, there was a voice from heaven that was heard to say, God the Father, speaking of the Son, "This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." Just want you to think about that for a moment. You know, this is my Son, whom I love. With him, I am well pleased. I think it's so informative for parents, especially dads, where they ought to say that they're so well pleased with their children. Teenagers need to hear that. I'm so glad that you went off to church today to help. I'm so glad that you helped the young people's president. I'm so glad you helped with this, that, and the other. We ought to be pleased with these things. They're taking up a responsibility, and it makes such a difference. It's so easy for someone to say, it's okay for Jesus. I mean, he was God's son. He was perfect. He was able to do miracles. He knew everything. Isn't it wonderful for him? But I'm not like that. And yet, isn't it also significant that when he returned home to Nazareth and he taught, they were actually surprised. We know him. We know his mom. We know his brothers and sisters who live just around the corner. We remember him. They were surprised because there was nothing special about Jesus Christ. And they were thinking, there's nothing special. He just one of our neighbors. We remember him as a child. We remember him as a teenager. And there didn't seem to be anything that stood out about Jesus for them. And apparently he didn't outshine others in certain tasks. And what that really says to us is that Jesus knows what it's like for a teenager to be ordinary. Because one of the big difficulties teenagers have is that, I can remember those days, you want to be somebody. And sometimes you end up pretending to be someone. And it doesn't always work very well. And remember school, you know, there were certain teenagers and they were the leader of the pack. You know, they were something. They wanted to be the limelight in everyone's life. Well, Jesus, he wasn't. He was just an ordinary person. He was just an ordinary 5'8", as they used to say. And Jesus has been where we all have been, and I think that is an awesome thought. It's also another awesome thought that